Going to do as we try and figure out the technical issues is move ahead for the next speaker. Next speaker is Curtis Giles. He's a 12-year veteran of the Utah Division of Child and Family Services. During this time, he served as a child abuse investigator, in-home and foster care case manager and program manager. He is currently a child welfare administrator for the Northern Region of DCFS and has direct responsibility over DCFS in Weber and Morgan counties. He also serves as the liaison for the Northern Region DCFS and the Mexican Consulate. In 2001, Curtis graduated from the University of Utah with a bachelor's in science and psychology and is a licensed social worker. He is a Utah native but has lived in various places including Colombia, South America, and is fluent in Spanish and English. In his spare time, he loves to spend time with his wife and three sons, recreate in the outdoors, and volunteer his time to help others and help us stay on schedule today.
Can hear me? I'm going to try to be your accordion speaker and try to make it so that we can condense and get you guys back on time. In addition to what has been said about my background, prior to coming to the Division of Child and Family Services, I worked in law enforcement for a couple years. So I come and I'm talking to you about the issues of child abuse from a criminal perspective as well as what we do at the Division of Child and Family Services. I'm assuming that we have kind of a broad array of professionals here, perhaps people in private practice, or I'm not sure if you're all from one specific facility, but it pertains to you nonetheless, the issues of child welfare, specifically child abuse and child neglect. And wow, there we go. Maybe I have to stand weird, I don't know. There's a couple abbreviations that you're gonna see today. And first and foremost, if you look up at the top, it's UCA, stands for Utah Code Annotated. It's just a reference to Utah law. And you'll see that throughout the slide. What I'm going to be presenting to you as well in terms of these legal citations, it's just a brief summary of what it is, not the entire text. First and foremost, we don't have the time to go through that, and secondly, it would be extremely boring. Abuse is legally defined in the state of Utah. And the way we look at that is that it's non-accidental trauma caused by the fault or actions of another. And that could be injury, that could be even exploitation. It's a legally defined term. Abuse will not include reasonable actions of a parent. Now, one of the most common questions that we get is, can a parent spank a child? Well, the answer is yes. Parents can spank a child, but the moment that they leave a mark or a bruise or an injury, they've crossed that line into abuse. And so that's where probably you will be seeing some of these kids come across your practices if they're coming for treatment. And you're treating an injury that you look at and say, well, wait a minute, this kind of looks like it's non-accidental. Or perhaps the injury that's being described does not match what they say happened. And so there's a couple other key laws that you're going to want to be aware of in terms of your practice. Neglect is very similar. In short, it's any action or inaction on the part of a parent or a caregiver, even somebody who has legal custody and guardianship of a child, that causes that child to not have the basic things that child needs to be healthy emotionally and physically. We talk about that in terms of food, clothing, shelter, nurturance. And it's also, it can be from the faults or the habits of a parent. If a parent doesn't necessarily mean to neglect the child, but the child is still being neglected, we still go in and investigate and offer services. So neglect doesn't have to be intentional in order for it to be neglect. Neglect simply means that child is being deprived of the basic things that they need to be emotionally, physically healthy, to be alive, those sorts of things. I'm going to try to move through this quickly. Again, we have several types of abuse, several types of neglect. These are the most common ones that we see, that we investigate. Having done this, having been in child welfare for more than a decade, I spent probably the first 5.5 years investigating these various things. And we see things from, in terms of severity, very minimal things where it's like, this is probably more poor parenting than abuse or neglect, all the way up to, holy cow, we've got a dead child. It's now a homicide. So I've seen the full gamut. But these are the most common ones that you'll see. Child endangerment, again, that has to do with any of the illegal activities of a parent, children who are exposed to drugs. That would be child endangerment. DVRCA is an acronym. It stands for domestic violence-related child abuse. Emotional abuse is another one of those. Physical abuse, Pediatric condition falsification is probably one that you'll see more often than maybe some of these other ones. Those pediatric condition falsifications are very complex. If you ever come across a case where you feel like, hey, you know what, I'm treating a patient here, and perhaps the treatment that's being requested isn't necessarily warranted, or you have suspicions that perhaps the treatment is too frequent, or whatever, the child's being harmed, please notify us. Don't feel like you have to do an investigation alone. That's not what you have to do. We can conduct that investigation. There's also an organization at Primary Children's Hospital called Safe and Healthy Families, and we've used them multiple times, and what they'll do is they'll actually do a full comprehensive review of the patient's file, have the patient actually come in and be seen, be evaluated. The other thing that does, it kind of takes the discomfort away from you as physicians or treating physicians to have to try to determine, is this pediatric condition falsification? Sexual abuse, fetal exposure to drugs, those are fairly self-explanatory. With the exception of fetal exposure to drugs, my next slide is going to deal with that and provide a more in-depth explanation of what that really means. In terms of neglect, abandonment, educational neglect requires that a child be more than 2 years behind in school. And we have to actually work with the school districts in order for them to tell us that this child truly is 2 years behind developmentally or academically. Failure to protect, that's where a parent has or a guardian has specific knowledge that a particular child is at risk for abuse or neglect, and they fail to take any protective measures to ensure that that child is safe. One example of that might be a parent who has a paramour move into the home that she knows is a known sex offender. And the sex offender is spending a lot of time alone with this child. And then we find out 3 weeks later this child's then been abused. That is a failure to protect on the part of a parent. And we will go after the perpetrator of that abuse as well as the person who failed to protect. But again, it assumes that there was a specific knowledge on the part of a parent or a caregiver to know that there was a risk and that they willfully allowed that child to be exposed to that risk and did nothing to really remedy that. Medical neglect, we're going to lean on you guys for that. If you call us up and say, hey, you know, we need to come out and take a look at this case. We believe this child has been neglected in terms of not getting the proper, necessary medical care. We're going to rely heavily on you and your opinions for that in order to make a determination as to whether or not really medical neglect truly is or is not occurring. Non-supervision, just that's when parents just aren't really watching their kids and they do dangerous things. And of course, physical neglect is kind of withholding those necessary things for life, food, clothing, shelter. Fetal exposure to harmful substances. When I was first asked to kind of speak here, I had a chance to talk to Mark a little bit about what he wanted me to present on. And he talked about a specific situation that he had with a parent that had been using drugs. And this is one that we get most common, or a question that we get most commonly from physicians is, you know, what type of drugs trigger an automatic removal from a parent if a child's born positive or testing positive or addicted to those substances? And the answer is there isn't one. We have to look at the overall picture of the family. You know, if we have a child that's born addicted to, you know, to substances, maybe it's methamphetamine, maybe it's marijuana. We have to look at it and say, in terms of safety and well-being, can that child safely remain in that home? Is there another person, a protective parent, a parent who's not using drugs, who can care for that child and watch that child while we come in frequently to monitor that child, in addition to making sure that child has frequent visits to the medical professionals in that child's life to make sure that they're being okay. But fetal exposure also doesn't have to mean that the child is actually born addicted to that substance or testing positive for that substance. If a parent uses any illegal substances or even abuses prescription medications during the time of their pregnancy, that is also fetal exposure. And we do investigate that and certainly make findings and seek to intervene in families that really struggle with that. Again, these are probably the most vulnerable of the clients that we work with are these young babies who, of course, have no voice. They're not very visible in the community. So we have to go in and treat those a little differently. In terms of making a referral to the Division of Child and Family Services, if you want to do that, if you feel like you have come across abuse or neglect, we need a couple things from you in order to be able to really work this case and investigate. First of all, we have to have a victim. We've got to have a name, some way of identifying and locating that child. And a good example of that is we had a lady call us up once and she said, you know, we've got some kids out here at this apartment complex and they're just playing out on the playground. They've been here all day long and there's no adults around. And we said, great, well, where do they live? Where's their parents? What's their name? And she said, well, I don't know, but they're little Hispanic kids. And I said, well, I can't do anything about that unless I have a way to locate those children. Are they out there right now? She said, no, but they live in the apartment complex. And we went out to the apartment complex, and there's 100 units. And I can't go and knock on every door looking for little Hispanic children and saying, you know, were you guys the ones that were out playing and all day long and begging people for food? So we have to find a way to get to make contact with that victim. The other thing we have to do is make sure that they're under the age of 18. Once they're over age of 18, we can't do anything with them. And we also need a valid allegation of abuse and neglect. When you do call in a referral to the Division of Child and Family Services, if a case is open, the intake department will tell you that a case has been opened. If they're not going to open a case, they will also tell you that they're not going to be able to open a case and tell you why. But we have certain specific priority response time frames. Priority one, which means we have 1 hour to go out and be wherever that child is. And those are typically, you know, we've got a child that's found in the middle of a road. There's nobody there to care for that child. A 24-hour response for priority two, we have, I guess what would trigger one of those would be if we have marks or bruises or other evidence that we need to collect to where we can't wait, or if there's an in-home perpetrator. For example, we might have a father or stepfather who's sexually abusing their child. We become aware that child's at school now disclosing sexual abuse. We have 24 hours with which to go and see that victim. In cases like that, I can't recall a time where we've ever taken 24 hours, but that's kind of what that means. Most of the time, in terms of general abuse or neglect, if there aren't marks or bruises or other injuries or serious safety issues, we'll go out within 72 hours and see that child. The next several slides are going to be several key laws that are important to you as physicians and medical professionals in terms of, you know, you and child welfare, and they're pretty important. So, move on to that. Reporting requirements. I think most everybody here has heard the term mandated reporter. In the state of Utah, it's kind of interesting. It's different than other states. In the state of Utah, any person who lives and breathes within the border of this state is a mandatory reporter. You don't have to be a physician, a therapist, a psychologist, school. Everybody who lives and breathes within the state of Utah is a mandatory reporter. Which means if you suspect that there's child abuse or child neglect that's occurring, you are legally obligated to report that. And I would ask you to do so because there's a couple, that'll take me to the next slide. Because failing to report that is actually a crime. It's a Class B misdemeanor. If you willfully withhold that information, it's a crime. In addition to that, you could be held civilly liable if that victim makes a report to you and makes a disclosure to you and you don't act on that, and that child continues to be abused. Later on, if it comes to the attention of attorneys or whatever it may be, they could come back and say, well, I reported it to my physician and they didn't do anything about it. So please, if you're aware of it, make those phone calls. It's a difficult position to have to be in, we understand, especially when you're treating and working with these patients and of course, the parents that sometimes bring them in. But make sure you report that. And again, you don't have to be a physician. You just have to simply live and breathe here in the state of Utah, and you are considered a mandatory reporter. If you also come across situations where you believe that there has been a death of a child, and that death is as a result of injury, non-accidental trauma, abuse, neglect, you have a responsibility to immediately notify law enforcement or the medical examiner's office. In cases of death, you do not have to notify the Division of Child and Family Services. And the reason for that is because we no longer have a victim. There may be siblings that live in the home that might be at risk, but law enforcement will go ahead and notify us and say, hey, when they go out and do their initial investigation, we have a couple other children who might be at risk here. We need your help to come out and look at it and evaluate and conduct an investigation while we look at the circumstances surrounding the death. The next one is photographs. If you have patients that you see that you come across suspicious marks or bruises, or injuries that don't happen to have a valid explanation, you are able to photograph those. What I would tell you to do, though, is don't do that. Make a referral. Allow us to do it. I haven't met a physician yet that wants to be subpoenaed to trial and have their evidence put on and the photographs that they have that they've taken to be used in a criminal or civil proceedings. If you come across a child that has injuries or that need to be photographed, please notify us immediately. That will trigger, again, one of those priority responses. And we will take that child down to Safe and Healthy Families or to our local Children's Justice Center, where we have people who are specifically trained in forensics who will photograph those injuries because you have to provide a scale to it. And it's not just a matter of photographing the injury. We did have one physician once that was very well-meaning and you know, saw a big handprint on the back of a child And he did a good job of taking that out, and taking his camera out, photographing that. And then he sent us the pictures, and they were absolutely useless because all we had was a big picture of the handprint. We had no picture, we had no scale, we had no victim. All we could see was a picture of a handprint on a skin, and that's useless for us. So again, if you come across those things, don't feel like you have to collect the evidence yourselves. Feel free to send that on to, you know, to us to do. This is probably the biggest one, and that is the immunity from liability. If you act in good faith and you make a referral or report of child abuse to law enforcement, to the Division of Child and Family Services, you are immune from any criminal or civil liability that may come as a result of your interactions. Now, we hear the word HIPAA all the time. Well, I'm not sure if this is a HIPAA violation. There are exceptions to HIPAA. I'm sure you're all aware of those. Reporting abuse and neglect is one of those. It does, at the top of the slide, it does say, except as provided in subsection 3. Subsection 3 simply deals with fraud or making things up. You know, I've not come across any physician that's ever done that, that's made a false report. But again, you are immune from civil and criminal liability for participation in a child welfare investigation. Protective custody, here's another one for you. In the state of Utah, there are only three types of people or three people who have the authority to take a child away from their parent under certain circumstances. One would be agents of the Division of Child and Family Services. Two would be law enforcement members of the community, police officers. And third are physicians. Not very many people know this, that physicians have the authority in the state of Utah to physically remove a child from their parent under certain circumstances. And those circumstances are pretty specific. And it has to do with making sure that you have reason to believe that the child's life or safety will be in danger unless that action is taken. Most physicians give us a call, especially we see this most often with newborns that might be exposed to drugs, and the parents are showing up and they're high and they're saying, we don't want to release this baby, but the baby's got to be released today, what do I do? They have the ability, or you have the ability, to keep that child under 72-hour hold, but you must immediately notify the Division of Child and Family Services that you've taken that action. And then we will go ahead and work with you in terms of making sure that child's got a place to go and is safe. And then within 72 hours, we have to take that before a judge. But again, if you'll keep this in mind with that the immunity from criminal and civil liability, that's something that will protect you. Now, in terms of DCFS protective custody, people wonder why we can't just go in and remove children from homes. The United States Constitution has the 4th and 14th Amendment, which guarantees citizens the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. So taking a child from a parent is considered a seizure. Conducting an investigation in terms of interviews and forensics that we go out and collect is also considered a search. They also have the right to due process. And so in some circumstances, we are required to get a warrant to remove a child from a parent. There are other times, however, when we're not. If that parent or if that child is at immediate risk for injury, abuse, sexual abuse, we have the authority to take that child into custody under exigent circumstances and then go before a judge and explain why we've done it. And then the judge can determine whether or not that removal needs to be continued or whether that child should be returned home. So that's just one little thing that I wanted to clarify. How best to work with the Division of Child and Family Services? Most hospitals have social workers. If you have a suspected case of abuse or neglect and you're not too sure what to do, feel free to talk to your social worker. But also understand, we have a lot of physicians that get frustrated because they come across a case of abuse or neglect and they talk to the hospital social worker and the hospital social worker calls the referral in. The physicians say, well, I never heard back, I never heard anything. And that's probably true because we have a responsibility legally and ethically to keep the information of that patient or that client confidential, with the exception of physicians. I don't think most people understand that. So when you have a hospital social worker call in an allegation of abuse or neglect, that hospital social worker cannot call us back and get a follow-up because the law does not allow us to release that information. The law does have some exception for physicians. So if you have a patient that you're treating that you're concerned has been abused or neglected, feel free to make a phone call to the investigator and say, listen, I'm the treating physician here, or I'm the one who made the referral. I'd like to know the results of the investigation or how things are going. We can talk to you about what's happening, but we can't do that to anybody or, you know, for anybody else. So just keep that in mind. Again, I kind of talked about some resources that are available to you. If you come across suspected abuse or neglect, don't feel like you have to conduct the forensic investigation on your own. You don't have to collect the evidence on your own. There's also places and medical professionals who are there to support you. We've got Safe and Healthy Families at Primary Children's Medical Center. you should all have this phone number written down. If you don't, please write it down or make sure you've got it somewhere. I think it's included in the CD that you or DVD you were able to pick up this morning. The other one is the Weber and Morgan Children's Justice Center for those who work up here in Weber and Morgan counties. In Davis County, there's a Davis County Justice Center, but every county has a Children's Justice Center. And at each one of those facilities, there are trained medical professionals who are trained in forensics, who will take the photographs, who will conduct that kind of forensic investigation for you. All we simply need from you is the referral and the information that a child's been abused or neglected, or that you have that suspicion. With respect to that, trying to keep it short, I'll turn it over to you for a very few brief questions, and I'll do the best I can to answer those. And again, my phone number is up here. My area of responsibility is I'm in charge of everything in Weber and Morgan counties. So if you ever have a question or a situation that you come across that you're concerned, have a complaint or need some clarification, this is my phone number. Feel free to write it down. Feel free to call me. It is a daytime phone number. I will be there between 8 and 5, Monday through Friday. So with that, I'll open up to any questions. Yes. It's the same. Whether you separate that parent from the child or the child from the parent, it's the same thing. Oftentimes in terms of an example where we remove a parent from a home or we ask a parent to leave, we might have a father who's sexually abusing a daughter and the mother's in the home. So rather than deprive that mother of her daughter where she wasn't aware of the sexual abuse occurring, sometimes we'll go in and we'll say, you know what, we need you to step out for the safety of the child while we conduct and conclude our investigation. If they say no, then oftentimes we'll go back and staff with the Attorney General's office, who represents us in terms of legal questions, legal matters, and determine whether or not we need to get a warrant to do that. But most of the time, we try not to do that unless we have evidence, of that something's really happening. We try to make sure that child and that parent can stay together, except in cases like that where it's going to be unsafe. But in terms of removing a parent from a child or a child from a parent, it's the same process. The parent's entitled to due process, the child's entitled to due process. If we go in and we threaten anybody and say, hey, you have to leave, otherwise we're going to take your child into custody, we've already removed that child from the parent. So,
question? Can I have one more question?
One more.
Okay, just one. What is the time limit? I had a teenager that said she had been sexually abused like 2 years earlier. And I said, are you currently being sexually abused? She says, no. But that person is still within the family unit. So what do I do there? Do I have to report that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, please report that. There is no time limit. And the reason why we do that is because children who are young, who are vulnerable, oftentimes, a child who's being sexually abused at 7 years old may not have the language to describe what's happening to them until they're 14. Or they may not be in a safe enough situation until they're much older. So those time frames in terms of abuse and neglect are kind of gone, unless, of course, the person's 50 and the perpetrator's dead. But please report those, even though it's happened a long time ago. Or if a patient comes and discloses to you today that this happened to me 5 years ago, report that.
Okay, and it's all anonymous, or?
It can be anonymous. We do prefer to have a way of contacting you for additional information. If we get to the point where we don't have enough information to conduct the investigation, you might have that piece that would allow us to continue going forward. If you would call it an anonymous, we don't have a way of contacting you, but every person that calls in, it's kept confidential. It is a Class B misdemeanor for anybody in the state of Utah to release your name if you are the referent to somebody on a child welfare case.
What about child abusing child? I mean, we had an 11-year-old perform oral sex on a 4-year-old.
Yeah, the same.
Same thing.
Same thing.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much for your time. I hope you enjoy your conference.
All right, perhaps we have the slides for Dr. Tingey back from cyberspace. So we'll get Dr. Tingey started up again, and we'll try and keep rolling to try and get you guys back on schedule. Thanks.